How's everybody doing? It is Monday here in Chicago. Chicago Jazz Magazine, ChicagoJazz.com, and of course, the Director of Programming and Entertainment, a soon-opening Epiphany Center for the Arts, Rick Allen and Adams. I'm happy you guys are all, we did a little time change, so this is day of the new time change at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, so hopefully everybody's going to crowd around their live stream and check it out. Of course, if you miss this and you're watching this on the replay, it's available at ChicagoMusicReveal.com, along with YouTube, along with all of our podcast platforms, Instagram TV, everywhere else you can find a live stream. Plus, we also put it on ChicagoJazz.com and Chicago Jazz Magazine. So, tonight, hopefully everybody had a wonderful weekend. We're a little late. Had technical difficulties. Smooth. We love comments. We love the likes. We love the shares. So hit us up. Give us some thumbs up if you're digging what's happening. I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm excited. We have an incredible saxophonist, Sam Newsom, on the show today. And he has got three brand new releases because he doesn't mess around at all. During a pandemic, he puts out three releases, man. That, Sam, and I'm glad we've got you on the show today to talk about all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Man, oh, man. So let's talk a little bit about, well, there's three releases. Now, the one that I checked out first, and it seems like it's the most recently recorded. All of these, and correct me when I'm wrong, but I think all of these are live recordings that you've recorded. Two of them were in 2020. One was in 2019, and you put them all out. And there's quite a range of repertoire, too, that you're doing on these because I see, like with this first one, Subspace Interception, right? And you were you were doing that, and that was part of the Women from Space Festival in Toronto, and you teamed up with Kayla Milne.
Kayla Milmine.
Kayla Milmine. See, you corrected me before I came out. I knew I'm not. I'm a drummer. I can't retain stuff that long, you know. So, anyways, but you teamed with Kayla on this one, and this one. There's three different pieces on this recording, and it's duo, two saxophones performing. And then you also have a solo recording that you put out, which is live at the Red Room in Baltimore, Maryland. And then also, well, it's Sonic Journey live at the Red Room. And then you have Dan Newsom Trio, Free Wyoming, and that is live at the Metro Coffee in Wyoming, I'm assuming. So let's talk about this first one, the Subspace Interception. And this one, it's two saxophones.
Yes.
You know, as I told you before we came on, I thought it was very interesting because I've heard a lot of different recordings of people doing solo, duo, trio, and really starting working through the spontaneous composition, shall we call it, you know, kind of freeform stuff, but with themes around it. And this kept my, I was interested the entire time. There's so many different textures, so many different layers. First, before we get into the music specifically, you must have played with Kayla in the past somehow because you guys were really working off of each other and your ears must be really dialed into each other in order to be able to do something like this.
Yes, yeah. I mean, initially our relationship began when she took lessons with me. Remember how long ago, maybe it was 5 or 6 years ago, I was teaching as a part of the School for Improvisation Music. Mm-hmm. It's a workshop run by Ralph Alessi. Okay. So I was a part of that briefly. And I remember, you know, she was one of the few soprano players who was actually signed up for it. So she reached out to me and, you know, she said she liked, you know, the way I was thinking about music and something I was doing. So she wanted to get some lessons, you know, as a part of this whole program. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, you know, we just kept our friendship going. You know, I was very much interested in her music. You know, from there, she started sending me things that she was going on, and I started writing her. And then from there, you know, we just formed this musical relationship that has been ongoing, and it seems like it's going to be going on for several more years in the future. And I guess what's unique actor about our relationship too, our musical relationship, is that she's actually very much open to a lot of the concepts that I've been honing over the past few years, specifically the prepared saxophone techniques that I've been developing probably the last 4 or 5 years. Because, you know, whenever she comes to New York, We usually get together now for some things I'm working on, and then she'll show me some things she's on. So it's been a reward collaboration that we've formed over the past several years.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, you can tell that you guys have been working together on a lot of things
Yeah.
because, you can't go in and can't do something and recording and performing live with what you did because you guys are very, very just like you're raw. You guys are out there. It's like you are working off of the other person. You're having your ears. Everything has to be dialed in. Now, let's talk specifically about the music that's on here.
Yeah.
How do you go about? I mean, is this stuff that you and her talk about, or have you? I mean, is there a way for you guys to kind of rehearse this stuff ahead of time, or what's the way that you go about preparing repertoire for something like this kind of a recording?
Well, I guess first off, I just wanted to say we actually did not set out to make a live recording. I mean, really, it's just a gig that just happened to get recorded. That was that we did as part of the Women from Space Festival. And then afterwards she sent me a recording. And I was like, man, this sounds good. And I said, do you mind if I put it out? She was like, no, go right ahead. But as far as us developing repertoire, well, all of the stuff that we play, or actually or at least played for the concert, it was all improvised. And I guess there is a sense of structure and even a sense of form, within the composition. And the reason is because we both think in a very musical way. We both certainly are forging a path, in improvised music of our own. But I think what probably separates us from a lot of players in that genre is that, we do like to be very musical. It's not all the sweeps and barks and and making noise and just creating a lot of intensity. It's about embracing just a wider range of dynamics. So when you put all of those things together, all of those different subtleties, you can come up with something where the end result can sound like it was composed. Because if you think about what composition is, it really is just a certain logic that's conveyed. And I think for us, because we're coming from the same place, it's easy for us to do collectively. I think when we're playing together, at no time do I feel like, uh-oh, we're not really together. Maybe she's going to a different place than maybe I want to go, or maybe I'm going in a different place than she wants to go. There's always a musical chemistry that's intact.
You brought up a great point from the musicality standpoint, especially with this kind of music, because I mean, if you're a casual music fan and you're walking into a, let's say a music fest, because I know here in Chicago, they have the Chicago Jazz Fest. We're a sponsor of the Chicago Jazz Fest. And I, you know, that they have avant-garde groups on stage. And when people walk in and they're hearing the squawks, they're hearing all that stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. I understand they're working off of harmonies and everything. But that's a little bit different than what you guys are doing for the most part, because you brought up a great point, the musicality of it. And I think because you're so accomplished in all different genres of saxophone, I mean, you can play straight ahead, you can do whatever. This recording, the other recordings too, I hear a lot of melodies, and I hear a lot of melodies playing off of other melodies. A lot of, and I'm a big fan of melody, right? So I that's how I really dig it. I'm sure you're probably the same way. Is that a conscious effort? I mean, because I'm hearing these wonderful melodies playing off of another melody and off of another melody and intertwining through the improvisation.
Well, it's a conscious effort in that it's something that I want to do, but certainly in the process of creating the music, I'm not thinking in a deliberate way of where I would say, well, I'm going to create a melody here. It's just a part of my aesthetic of being melodic. And I guess for me, when I create melodies, it just gives more clarity to my statement, because I find if there's a good amount of melodic substance to what I'm doing, it actually frees me up to push the envelope more in the other direction, because then I feel like a certain foundation has been laid. And once that foundation is there, it actually makes me feel more secure. And the more secure I feel, I think the more adventurous I become when I start to improvise.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. So I mean, it's interesting because listening to this one and then talking about the improvisation, but you're also playing some standards on this other recording where you performed a solo. Well, I don't know if there's standards. I mean, Giant Steps is on there and most,
Absolutely.
but it seems to me like what you just described, like let's take, Giant Steps is on this recording on the Red and the Sonic Journey, where you're playing solo. So you're now it's making sense in my mind because of what I listened to is that you're laying a foundation. So you're laying down that theme of like let's say Giant Steps or Monk's Dream or something. You're laying something down there, and then you're able to start working off of that because you've placed the foundation down for this is what this is, and now I can work off of it, and then you come back at the end just like as if you were playing a tune with a rhythm section, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's for the most part, it's keeping the same format. You know, you have the introduction of the melody, and then you sort of go into something maybe a more abstract or looser, and then you bring it back home. You know, so there is a contour, you know, to the improvisation. Even though in some cases the tunes are totally improvised, it's still keeping the same you might say this construct of a pre-composed tune.
So I'm always curious because, all right, I can sit down at the drums and play a solo for 45 minutes and I think I'm great. Who cares, right? But there's a lot of different things I can hit and use and utilize with a drum set or solo piano or even solo bass. But when you get into saxophone, I mean, you're up there, you're naked. I mean, it's you with the sax and you're performing. So how did you develop your ability to play solo, or actually your not motivation, but like your courage to go and play a solo and do a whole concert solo saxophone in front of people and know that it's going to go somewhere and have you come out. I mean, this has got to be something you've developed over time where you feel real comfortable because this is a whole other way of playing and conceptualizing saxophone, right?
Well, first of all, I just want to say it's been a lot of trial and error. when I first started playing solo, I can't that I could have made a live recording because it just the performance is inconsistent. You know, it's only been probably in the last 2 to 3 years that I've been making solo recordings, performance where I would now I think I could actually release that. And what I found is not so much in me playing the right stuff. It's really just knowing how to respond to the things that I've played. Because one of the things that you have to get used to when you play in a solo context is that there are going to be mistakes. So whether or not the mistakes inspire you or slow you down, I mean, that pretty much just depends on how you respond to them. So a lot of my concept or just learning how to play in a solo context has just been me knowing how to, I guess, back myself into a corner and just get out, you know, in a successful way or in a way that it came away looking like I meant to do that. You know, because, you know, a lot of times, like I've been getting into writing recently. I mean, if we talk about like how we dealt with being in quarantine, one of the things I started to explore was actually fiction writing.
Oh,
So
okay, wow.
mind you, all of the things I wrote were horrible. But I did enjoy the process. So one of the things as I was studying videos of people giving lectures about it, and one of the things that seemed to be consistent that all of the instructors, writing instructors, were saying was that what makes a great story is not necessarily what comes out of your head or what you first put onto paper, but it comes in the revision. You know, it's what you do with it once it's on the paper. You know, that's where the great stories come out of. You know, it's not like, oh, I have a great story, I'm gonna put down this masterpiece on a piece of paper. Like, that's right. not where it comes from. And I started thinking, like, that's kind of like what happens with the solo saxophone concept. You know, what makes a great performance is not necessarily me having these great ideas that I'm playing all the time. It's really just being comfortable with what I'm playing, what I played, and just knowing how to respond, or just responding in a way that doesn't sound forced, in a way that it just it keeps a certain musicality happening throughout, where it doesn't sound like I'm losing control of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it that just takes practice. You know, it takes practice. It takes me being sort of in a certain place spiritually. You know, I mean, it really has been a journey that goes far beyond music. And I find just the more I develop as a person, the better I'm able to give a solo performance. It's kind of interesting how it really has become, you know, sort of a musical example of my own personal growth.
You know, you brought up, I love the fact we're talking about this, because you explained it. And, you know, to me, I think one of the things, as you're discussing it, you know, you've got to be in a spiritual mindset and in a certain place to be able to do this. Playing solo, or even playing duo like you did with Kayla, those are two things that, to me, I wouldn't be able to, like, okay, I just got off of a flight, I had a horrible afternoon, I'm doing all this stuff and everything else, and now I've got 20 minutes before I got to go play a solo saxophone gig in front of 30 people, yeah. 100 people, whatever it is. Because you have to be in that frame of mind where the creativity has to be able to come in. You probably have to prepare in some way before you go out so that you can get your mind frame and your frame of mind, right? Is there a process to get to that point? Because it's way different if you're playing with a quartet or a trio, because you got a couple of tunes to kind of go, okay, let me get dialed in a little bit more, because there's other things happening. But you guys, you go out there, and also playing solo sax, especially allowing for that space and having the consciousness to still allow for space, even though there's nothing going on if you're leaving that space, but that's the musicality of it. But you've got to get your brain in the right spot, right? What's your process?
Well, I guess whenever I play a solo, I have spent a certain amount of time in solitude. You know, so if I'm in New York, you know, because I have a family, you know, I can't really get that kind of solitude I would need. But where I get it after is on subway. You know, it's like, in many cases, the ride to the gig could be at least, 45 minutes to an hour. And during that time, I'm just kind of getting into a zone. I'm just sort of relaxing. I'm just sort of freeing the mind, just sort of, just trying to rid the mind of the neuroses, the neurotic thoughts, and whatever. I mean, just to get into a very positive and peaceful state of mind. Yep. So that's the first thing, is try to get into that way of thinking. And then the second thing is, you know, it's good that I feel good. Mm-hmm. So if I have my solo performance coming up, you know, there are certain things I practice in a very rudimental way. I over practice melodies. Like, for example, if I know there might be, I don't know, 5 or 6 monk tunes that possibly I might swing in and out of, like, I'll just really just practice those melodies, you know, almost to the point where it's like the saying, don't practice things until you play it correctly. Practice them until you can't play it wrong. So you try to even just get into that mindset. So I guess one, just being very solid with the melodies. And then I spend a lot of time just working on my sound.
Mm-hmm.
And just making sure just play my fingers feel good. Not necessarily able to play fast, but they just feel good touching instruments. So when I go to play, I really just feel at one with the instrument, where I physically feels good, spiritually I feel good. So when I go to play, really my only objective is to just get out of the way of the music and just let whatever's going to happen happen, and don't judge it, just observe it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it takes practice to be able to get yourself into those mindsets. So, I mean, you probably, I mean, well, I know, I mean, you have to conscious keep thinking about doing this so that when you finally get to a point where you're doing these concerts, it's easier for you to get into that flow. And for every,
Absolutely.
you know, everybody watching this, I mean, this isn't like you're going to go out and do this tomorrow. I mean, this is a thing that Sam's been working on for many, many years to get to the point, because I mean, to be able to free yourself and really be creative and not self-conscious about what's going on and not care because you're confident in what's coming out of the instrument, that takes a long time. And that's also finding your voice and being able to do all that.
Absolutely. Because actually, one thing I just wanted to touch on is this Tony Robbins actually gave this speech. He was talking about sort of about being a millimeter off. Well, I guess what it was, the story was he was taking golf lessons, and he was like the first lesson, he was just knocking it out of the park. I guess literally.
Yeah, he's gigantic.
he was just, it's like felt like he was just meant to do that, to play golf. And then he said the next few lessons he was saying, it was just, he just couldn't find it. It was like he was missing, he was hitting it, off course from where he'd be. And finally, so he was telling his instructor, he was like, "Man, my stroke is just really off." And he said the instructor was like, "No, actually, it's just a millimeter off." So he said, "Wow, really, just a millimeter, can be the difference of me having a really great, really bad." So the whole speech was about, a lot of times we think that it's this major thing that's keeping us from connecting or hitting a home run, even tapping on this. So a lot of times it's just like very just subtle things. And I think when you're, for me, when I'm playing solo, I'm just trying to tap into the subtleties of the music, because that's what's gonna make a good performance. It's not gonna be me playing the hell out of the instrument or playing harmonically advanced ideas or rhythmically advanced ideas that have never been played before or gonna floor people. It's really just the subtleties. It's being able to have the vibrato at just the right time, leaving just enough space, be varying dynamic levels at just the right time. It's a very finely nuanced process, and it's in a, and as I said, the only way to get in tune to how to even, to even bring that to fruition is like you have a certain mental space to be able to respond to the fine nuances of playing music.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I mean, we're having a great conversation because this is a lot of stuff that casual listeners, musicians, young musicians, older musicians, I mean, this is all stuff that goes into finding your own voice and playing and really performing and bringing the best out of your entire experience on the instrument, So let's jump over to this last one. I still can't believe you put out three re releases, right? I mean,
Well, I just want to say I did not intend on doing that initially. So I guess what happened was, it actually started with the recording with Kayla, where, I said, "Yeah, would you be mind if I put it out?" She said, "Yeah, it'd be great." So initially, I said, "Well, you're going to be coming to New York, I think in the maybe late in the fall, so maybe I'll put it out then. We can do some gigs together and promote it and, go through that whole ordeal." And then Ron Coulter, the Trio Records, sent me that recording. I was like, "Wow, this sounds good too." And I thought, well, maybe, and I thought, well, maybe I'll put them both out. And then I remembered the solo recording. I remember at one time I was thinking about putting it out, but I just kind of put it on the back burner. Then I went back and listened to it. I was like, "Man, I think I can put all of these out." And initially, I was just going to spread them out over the summer. Like, I think I was going to release one in June, another in July, and another one in August. And then as I started getting the artwork together, I realized that the artwork for the he didn't do back and start to revise the artwork so it, the three recordings looked like they could be part of a series.
Yeah.
So then I thought, well, why not just go ahead and release all three? It's like, who says I have to sort of release them periodically? Why not just drop them and see what happens?
Well, that's and I love it because you get solo, duo, and trio. And yeah. I mean, you can really hear the differences in your playing and also the similarities and how you're thinking about it and the way we're talking right now. I think I encourage everybody to go over. And by the way, this has to be one of the best URLs, you know, ever. Some newmusic.com, right? I mean, that's where we want to send them. I'm like, come on. I had to look at it three times. I'm like, wait a minute, somenewmusic.com. Okay, well, that's perfect. So that you can pick up all the recordings over there. I encourage everybody to go check this out because after you just heard Sam and I discussing stuff, now you can go listen to it and really get a feel for what Sam's talking about because it's really exciting to listen to the solo and then the duo and then the trio, and you can hear them all. And, you know, talking about the trio, so before I even get to that, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, these are all three live recordings. Are these like board recordings or were there multi-tracking and they were just there multi-tracking and then you just happen to have the recordings or was it just off the board or how did the recording process go? Because, you know, you've played a million gigs. I'm sure you haven't recorded a million times, right? So, I mean,
Well, these are all, I think the subspace interceptions, I think that is from a board. Mm-hmm. I think the other two are just from a Zoom player.
Wow. I mean, they sound great.
You know, so I have a great engineer I've been working with, this guy, Kasuhito Naito. I mean, we've been working together maybe 20 years. Wow. Sometimes I almost feel like I need to start using someone else. So because I've always used him, I was like, well, maybe somebody else might be able to offer something different. But, you know, he's always been able to just deliver, you know, what I've needed. So I've never felt the need to change, but there's always something in the back of my mind.
Yeah, right.
That makes me wonder if I should. but he's been the one that's always been able to make a okay sounding recording sound very, very professional. And I think we've been working together so long that now, I mean, like these three recordings, you know, I wasn't even in the room with him. I just sent them to him, gave him some notes.
Yeah.
And then he's done so many for me that he knows what my aesthetic is, that he can just do them like, okay, listen to it. Perfect.
You know, it's interesting because you brought up the Zoom recording. And I mean, first of all, when you listen to these, it doesn't sound like a Zoom recorder. So obviously there was a lot. First of all, it's a really good Zoom recorder. It was placed in the right spot. And he did a great job on the engineering side. But how important, I mean, do you record your gigs and go back and listen to them even now with everything that you've done just to kind of get a feel for what's going on? How important is that for either a young musician or an established musician, always just kind of check out what you're playing. You can always learn something.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked me that. I mean, I consider myself to be a chronic recorder. Yeah, but I mean, I record myself practicing. I record rehearsals. Mm. Unfortunately, I don't record my gigs professionally enough. But what I have been doing, especially in New York, there's a videographer by the name of Don Mount. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but he has a channel that, you know, if you ever want to know who's doing what in improvised music, you know, go to Don Mount's channel, a YouTube channel. I mean, he's pretty much at everybody's gig. I mean, I don't even know how he does it. I mean, certainly before the whole coronavirus situation went down, I mean, he was probably out, you know, at least two or three times or maybe four or five times a week. And wow. He does that consistently. He's been doing that consistently for years.
Wow.
So if you go to his channel, I mean, you just have everybody in New York, I mean, who's playing a certain type of music, being featured on his channel. So what I started doing is I knew one, he would do a better job videotaping my gigs than I would trying to do it myself. And he has that I know if I gig and, you know, maybe 10 people show up.
Right.
You know, if Don puts it on his channel, you know, within, you know, 2 or 3 months, very easily I could get 2 or 3,000 people having gone to check it out.
Yep.
So if I'm not recording, I'm always getting someone else. Yes, and I always tell students, you know, I always bust their chops. I'm like, man, all of these apps that are serving no purpose on your phone other than to waste your time.
That's
and
it.
You don't record rehearsals. You don't have tuners on them. You don't have metronomes on them. You just have these things that are just total time waste. You're just totally squandering the technology. So I'm a big proponent of recording, you know, and I think actually having released these three live recordings, I think I'm going to invest more in just learning about how to record live and just, you know, just maybe how to get early and stuff, maybe buy some microphones and just really take advantage of being able to capture magical moments if they do unfold.
Well, that's the thing. You brought up a great point because, I mean, you're a little older than me, but not much. And, you know, when I was in college, man, I mean, I'd sit there with a Walkman tape recorder trying to record a session. It always sounded like crap half time, but I could hear what was going on at least because we were always, now you can just put your iPhone down and record like a 4K video. It's like,
yeah,
it's unbelievable. Yeah. For these younger kids, the ability they have outside of just watching things on YouTube and everything else, they're able to record stuff and listen back and all. Now, also an associate professor of music and also coordinator of the music program at Long Island, the Long Island University Brooklyn campus, right?
Yeah, in Brooklyn.
Yeah. So you've been doing that for a while. I mean, you must, you know, probably run into a lot of up and coming students, especially out there in the East Coast. I mean, you know, from that standpoint, you're probably watching a lot of these guys playing and stuff. And this kind of stuff and this kind of playing that you're doing, do you hear some of your students do some things where you're like, you know what, man, if I could do that when I was their age, imagine what would be happening right now just because of the way people can learn now at a younger age.
Well, you know, unfortunately, where I teach, you know, I would not say that the students are, I guess, they wouldn't fall into what you would call high performing category.
Right.
And a lot of them do come there, you know, very inexperienced. And they're not necessarily looking to play jazz or I'm not even sure, and certainly not class. They have an interest in music. They want to get a degree in music. Mm. But as far as having a professional career, I think it's just kind of an abstract concept. You know what I mean? Like for me and a lot of my peers when I was at the Berklee College of Music, like, having a professional career wasn't an abstract concept because we understood sort of the protocol of making it happen, you know.
Right.
Like first you have to really practice and just really get some stuff together. Then you go to New York. Hopefully some people hear you, they hire you, you experience playing with them, you play, then you start to play more nationally, then you play internationally. Next thing you know, people are booking you, bring your own projects, you know, to the venue. So we understood how that happened. So it wasn't just this abstract concept of, oh, I think I want to be a musician. It was like, in order for me to have a career, I need to do this, 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 and this. Mm-hmm. So we all had that, well, at least to the people I used to hang out with, we had that understanding. So I think the students that I teach, you know, because of their lack of experience, you know, they don't really have that kind of thorough understanding of how you get from point A to point B. So part of what I do with them, it just really just kind of opened up their horizons. You know, I try to introduce them to different players, and not even necessarily jazz players. I mean, it's just I kind of see where they are, and sort of meet them on their own terms, and then I sneak other stuff in. You know, say, well, if you actually like person, then you might like this guy, and then if you check out him, maybe about this, you know. So it's like just at least getting them to see the lineage of the person that they think has created it all, or the person that they feel has started it, and just, you know, really just show them that what that person is doing, you know, goes back generations, you know. So, you know.
Well, and you know, you brought up a great point because really in this day and age, I mean, the formula for becoming a professional musician is very different even from when you were coming up. So I mean, you know, it's like, oh my God, you know, so it's all crazy. But I'll tell you what, everybody's got to go check out. So somenewmusic.com, that's Sam Newsom's website. He's got the three releases up there. He's got Subspace Interception. He's got the Sonic Journey, which is his solo recording, and then he has Sam Newsom Trio Free Wyoming, and that's a really interesting listen as well. And now, Sam, before I let you get off, because I mentioned this to you before you came on, but you've played with a lot of outside of your own stuff, you've played with a lot of different musicians, very well-known musicians, internationally known musicians, just like you're an internationally known musician. But I remember, I can't believe it because I was reading through, and this is probably one of the turning points in my career, my jazz career, when I was just first starting out. I saw you guys. You were with Terrence Blanchard. You were at the Jazz Showcase, and everybody in Chicago watching this will remember it was at the old Blackstone Hotel at the Jazz Showcase. I don't even know if you even remember that spot that used to be there, but you remember the Joe Siegel and all that.
Absolutely.
And you guys played the Malcolm X Jazz Suite. It must have been right after Malcolm X came out. And you guys played Terrence's whole soundtrack essentially, but as a jazz suite. And that was probably one of the greatest concerts I ever experienced. I didn't even expect to experience it. I mean, you know, so thank you.
Oh man, thank you. It's been a real
But you guys were cooking, and I really appreciate you and your music, and I appreciate you jumping on here today. And hopefully, when all of this stuff ends, we'll be able to see you live sometime soon in Chicago too, because you tour a lot too, right? I mean, you're still out on the road doing a lot of different things when COVID-19 isn't happening.
I was scheduled to be in your area, in when was it? In the end of March. I was supposed to be at the University of Urbana,
Oh, sure.
Champaign,
Yeah, sure. Champagne.
with Jason Finkelman. I don't know if you know him. He has a series, I think the Urbana Arts, that he runs. So, and I think a lot of times musicians who come to play at his series usually book things in Chicago, so as a part of the trip.
Well,
So I
then.
was scheduled to be in that area, but hopefully one day I can be back.
Well, you keep us posted. Of course, I'm the program director now of the Epiphany Center for the Arts, where there's three venues. So if you're in the area, you know who to hit up, and we can talk a little bit about maybe having you come in and play a little bit, because I think it would be great. And it would be great to see you live in Chicago. Of course, it'd be great to see anybody live anywhere at this moment in time, right? I mean, fingers crossed this whole thing ends. But thanks so much for jumping on today, Sam. This has been great. Everybody head over to somenewmusic.com and check out these new recordings. And thanks so much. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you.
Emily,
Really
and
appreciate
we'll
that.
again soon.
Yeah.
All right, Sam, boy, you know, that was a great conversation. And I'm telling you, I'm encouraging everybody to go check that out, because his three recordings really go in order too. It's amazing how they all came out. Of course, he probably planned it out this way a little bit, but we talked a little bit about that. But solo, duo, and trio. And it all went really, it's a great listen. So I encourage everyone to go enjoy the stuff, download it, purchase it. I mean, you know, it's a great time to kick back, relax, and listen to some of this music. And hopefully, Sam and mine's discussion helped to explain it a little bit. So when you're listening to it, you get a better better idea, and you can think about it a little bit differently than you did before. So I appreciate everyone watching. Now, tomorrow we are back. We are dropping. I don't have the schedule in front of me because I came in from the other office and I'm here. So I am going to post things. We will get everything out. But we've got great guests throughout the rest of this week and next. So I appreciate everyone being on and watching and listening. And as I always say, if you like what you're hearing, please share it. Please like it. What do I say? Please share it. Please like it. Leave us a comment. If you've got an idea for somebody else that should be on the show, please hit us up. Send us a DM, send us an email, info@chicagojazz.com. Of course, as I also always say, if you like what you're hearing, tell your neighbors, tell your family, call the grandkids. Chicago Music Revealed right here tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Central Standard. Thanks for watching. We will be back. Stay safe.